Would you like to know more? Would you like to know more?
Welcome to the War Master Podcast, episode 147, with Paul and Chris and Barry.
Hello.
Hello.
We've got Chris back again because he's lead developer, well, second lead developer on the Cathay Developmental Army.
Thank you. Nice to be back after last time.
After that, it was very well received. They wanted rid of me and you, Paul, to be honest. They said, fire those two goons.
Yeah, exactly.
Wouldn't be the same without both of you.
Get rid of those Muppets. Let's have an adult in the room. I'm just saying what the people were saying. Anyway, so Chris is back to talk about something sensible, and I'm sure you'll discuss how it came to be and the process you went through. And so we're not going to fanny around with other stuff today. We're just going to discuss the Cathay list because that's what we're here to discuss.
Yep.
We'll try and keep it to an hour as usual because that's the kind of time that people have maximum to spend on a podcast.
Yep.
So Chris, what you've been up to since the Nippon list?
Not a lot. The lockdown came and I did we recorded the last one during lockdown. I spent a lot of time doing, not painting stuff, but converting things, because that sort of fitted with the amount of time I had available. So lots of nice little things when I get around to painting them, like sitting in front of me here. I don't know if you can see that. You might spot it's one of the sort of everlasting spells from one of the War Master sets, and I put it on one of the wizards from the Cromedy Forge Vampire Vikings thing. So it's going to be the Horn of Resounding in the Norse army, using something out of the bits box. It should paint up quite nicely. And just for you, Barry, some ogres. Ralparth to do this rather nice big beastie.
He's a big lad, isn't he?
With a little bit of work, you can get a couple of Black Gate ogres onto the top of. And so that's going to be like a character mount. It sort of looks like one of the Thunder Tusk or Thornhorn things, from Warhammer. But you know, no special rules. It'll just be a different version of the Rhinox stats.
When they did ogres again, they brought even bigger stuff, didn't they? So the Rhinox cavalry are not the biggest now. There's a new big boy in town.
There were Mornfang cavalry. They did Forge World did Rhinoxes that were actually even bigger than the Mornfangs. And then the biggest one was two large beasts. There was a Stonehorn.
Yes, Stonehorn. That's it. Yeah.
So the Warmaster Stonehorn, I did one of those two, slightly different model with some bits. Funnily enough, actually, out of the big ogre box.
Funny.
Taking pictures on the Facebook group back at the weekend. But again, it's just these are just fun to do and no special rules, but just to make it look more like the 28mm equivalent.
Yeah.
So just on a tangent, do you think GW are ever going to get out of this big is best thing they're going through now, where everything's got to get bigger and bigger and bigger?
Not from a commercial point of view. If you're going to buy a 50, 60 pound box of models and there's two ways or three ways of making the kit, then you're going to buy two or three of them. It's very common. But you know, you said it yourself, they're worth more money than Marks and Spencer's. They're planning to repay all the furlough money because they made so much money.
Yeah, exactly. Like, so, don't eat it.
This is not working. Let's not knock it.
Yeah.
I love them or leave them. The gateway drug that gets new people into the smaller parts of the hobby.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, when they're rocking and rolling, it means everybody else has to compete to get your hobby time, and it's a good thing. The bigger in my eyes, they can't be too big.
Well, there were some bad years back there. Let's not delude ourselves.
No. I'm talking about in the current picture. It's not a case where you want, GW are getting too big now. No, I don't think such a thing can actually happen to them. It's like no, they can go superstar, supernova if they can manage it. So because it will force others to compete, and so be it. Yeah, so it should.
Right, come on, Chris. Let's get on to Cathay then. So, how did we end up with Cathay?
There were two lists that were left to be done. out of the original trial armies book, of the ones that we were going to do, there were some lists that were blatantly not sensible, like the Dwarf Engineering Guild list, which is...
Oh no, I've just built it! It's in my job, ready to go! I've got a life-size
I know how much you love it, Barry, and you burst a blood vessel every time we even mention it.
It just makes for such a balanced, entertaining gameplay experience, sitting there annihilated by cannon.
Because this balloon is in the air, it can see you.
Not your hero, though. Okay, let's say we think about lists, because there's often a lot of talk about, and every time another list comes along, somebody says, oh, I'd like to finish the list that I've got with, or why isn't there a list for this sort of thing? And I think we need to really talk a little bit about the sort of developmental process, that you can have an idea for something, you can put it down on paper, it may be great to you, but other people actually should look at it and play with it a bit before it starts to get out there into the wild. There are certain lists that have been around for a long time. The Trial Armies list of Cathay had been around since 2009. The Nippon one was more untidy for reasons we talked about when we released the Nippon list. And the Cathay one was really the last of the lists we thought we wanted to do for the moment before we put, you know, other things out there perhaps. But the Cathay list was a mostly infantry army, a mostly infantry army with lots of humans and very, very little else. The main person who has been making this happen is Jim Beach. Mm-hmm. And Jim really should be sitting here doing this talk about it now, but Jim's a little bit shy on internet land for various reasons. And that's why you've got me back again. But Jim's done a huge amount of playtesting. I think he's probably one of the few people in the UK who's got this army ready for painting on the tabletop, ready for playing on the tabletop. And I think a lot of the time he proxies it as a Dark Elf army when he feels like playing Dark Elves. But Jim and Janners have done a lot of work to try out, refine the list. As we go through the list entries, there's a few things that have been changed from the old version. And we should have thought that there wasn't a lot of work to do to get this finished up. I looked at it and or at least what Jim was proposing, and I thought, this is lovely, but I don't feel particularly engaged by it. It's an interesting army, it's nice, but there's no compelling reason for taking it. There wasn't a great deal of fantasy in the list at all. And at around that time, we were having a couple of internal discussions. Martin Nilsson, who's one of the Swedish guys who's on the Facebook group quite a lot, Martin proposed some things which we looked at and thought, okay, there's some good ideas here, let's try and take these on board. And big credit to Jim, the way that he sort of shuffled things around, again, that'll come out when we look at the unit entries. He's turned it from something that I thought was quite a boring list, sorry to say it, into something actually that was nice, and I'd be tempted to actually, I'd certainly be interested in playing the army, and I might even be tempted to do it at some point. So, good job, Jim. Thank you very much.
That's the sign of a good list, is that you actually want to play it. That's why, like, someone like Paul has already got, like, 18 armies or something stupid. I've got a dozen armies. You just can't help yourself. You kind of get fixated, let's go build this list.
Yeah, why not? Some nice models come along, and again, once we're done with the list, we'll maybe talk about models, and if the listeners are wanting to build this army, the good news is that all the models are already out there.
Yeah,
you have to look at a couple of different places, but all the models are out there.
Good stuff. Okay, so did you want to share the list? We've got straight at it.
Okay. I've got the screen sharing on for those. Can you see the screen share?
I can't see the screen share yet. Let's see if I can.
I can see the screen share.
You can?
Yeah, I can. It's here. You're all in small boxes on the right.
Oh, maybe it's just me. I don't know. I don't know why that would be. It seems to record.
Barry, it's a bit, if you're putting this on YouTube, it needs to be from, you need to see it on your screen, I guess.
Well, for some reason, I can see you, Chris, and not the whatever you're sharing.
Okay. Let me end the share. I'll do it again. That fix it,
but there may be something going.
That's gone back to U3. Yeah. You know, U3 now.
I'll just put it up again.
And that's back to as it was for me. So I can see it.
Okay. That's irritating because I can't see it. Maybe let me have a look at the other screen.
Do you want to share it? Are you going to read out the fluff?
Yeah, I can read it. Yeah, cool.
Oh, hang on. No. Sorry, Chris. Let me just cut that bit out. What it was, it's got... There's two views when you're running it, and I was looking at the wrong view. I can see that. Thank you. Mm-hmm. So off you go, sir.
Okay, so the background of Cathay. What we have here is located far to the east of the Old World, the Grand Empire of Cathay. It's populous, wealthy, and technology advanced in comparison to many of its neighbours. The imperial cities and some of its borders are protected by very thick walls, and its armies have, for many centuries, used the secret of gunpowder to good effect. The Empire has also been successful in recruiting border tribes as mercenaries, turning potential invaders' strength, especially in cavalry, against them. Robust administrative structures exist in all provinces, and a combination of conscription and the hiring of mercenaries provides Cathay with large infantry-based armies. Invasions are frequent, but the highly disciplined imperial forces have always prevailed by wearing down their enemies and then eventually overwhelming them with reinforcements from other areas. That's the background.
Mm. Sounds good.
Very Chinese.
So yeah, I mean, historically, it's close to the sort of warring states period of Chinese history. Yeah. Again, I think it's important to say that we were not trying to create an army based on historical China. That will be obvious when we look at the chariot entries. And we were not trying to copy the Warhammer fan versions of the Cathay army, simply because a War Master army is very different from a Warhammer army in the way that you build it and what the rules are. And again, we'll talk about that when we come to particularly the Fanatic entries. So the rest of the background, just the commentary on the individual unit entries. What I like that Jim has done is he's explained some of the variation in some of the rules, and also he's pointed out here that you could actually quite easily proxy in some other units, some other armies. For example, for the crossbows, some commanders at the Borderlands use hobgoblin bowmen, absolutely fantastic. And in some provinces, orc mercenaries are deployed instead of normal spearmen. And that's actually very helpful because, again, if you want to play out the army with some different troops, or you want to build the army and you have some particular models that you really like, you could have pretty good fun swapping different things in and out. Always one of the things I like most about War Master that you have the option to proxy things. And it really doesn't matter, whatever's on the base, as long as you and your opponent are clear what they are, you can make the army any way you like. It's actually quite good fun. Do we want to read through all the bits of the background here, Barry, or should we just...
I'm not sure about that. Let's get to the stats. That's what really matters. This is fluff.
I think army rule probably we should start with.
I definitely want to talk about the army rule a lot because to me that's the diamond in the rough. So with the army rule here, it says structure and discipline. To reflect their empire's high quality military organization and command arrangements, Cathay commanders may issue orders to brigades of up to 6 units instead of the usual 4. However, this does not apply to brigades containing chariots or cavalry. So that right there, whose original idea was that, Chris?
I think that was Jim. Definitely wasn't me.
Yeah, it's a really good idea. That's diamond, that is. Because what you have here is a human-based army. You know, how can it be different from the other, like, more vanilla art, like Empire and stuff? It's like, this is how you do it, is by coming up with a unique army rule. So a army that can order 6 infantry units is unique in War Master. Skaven obviously can do it with no restriction, but they're all totally infantry and that's their thing. You know, nobody can do it with, so apart from them, nobody else can do it with 6 units. That is straight away to me stands out as the reason, like, as in that is a big thing to play Cathay, is you can have a lot of these troops in one go ordered about. I think to me that's really good. That makes them different from Bretonians, makes them different from Empire, makes them different from Nippon, Kislev, you know, it goes on and on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when he first proposed it, it was all units. So it would have been cavalry as well.
Yeah.
And then we actually started looking at some builds and realized actually that with the numbers of troops that you allowed, the number of mounted troops, you'd end up with two big block, big six unit blocks of cavalry and chariots potentially, which would have been a bit difficult for your opponent to deal with.
Well, also it's going against what you've stated in the fluff is what is a cafe army? It's predominantly infantry. You know, like if we're saying that the cafes can ride horses, they just don't have it in many numbers, and they tend to pay other people to do that for them.
Very nice. And as you've both said in this podcast many times, you change one core rule and the whole army plays completely differently.
And it's much better than giving them a leadership 10 general, which was never happening.
We didn't even discuss that.
Definitely discussed. It was 100% discussed. Yeah, for sure. Okay. I'm sure this was one of the ones that
we talked about it for Nippon a lot, because we were going to do Command 10 with the Dark Elf Blunder rule, it felt really right with the fluff, but not many people agreed with me. So we.
There was a small off the cuff comment about leadership 10 generals on the Facebook page. I don't know if you saw. That hornet's nest doesn't need much poking before it goes explodes.
I did see that, but I saw if I had the meme to put the reset the clock one, I'd have put that on for it. Like reset the clock. Someone mentioned this. Someone new to the system. Why can't I have Command 10 for everybody? And it's like,
that one, and the other one is that why do Dragon Princes and Phoenix Guard not have any?
Oh yeah, that exact yeah.
Reset well, the I've clock. Got some,
yeah, reset the clock on that. Yeah, like we discussed this to death. Like,
you know what? Somebody needs. I've started sort of writing a welcome to playing War Master thing, and there's a few frequently asked questions. Those two are definitely
frequently asked questions.
What are the special rules for Phoenix Guard and High Elf Swordsman? And
why can't I have leadership 10?
Why you can't?
Elsies. Why those Elsies? So okay, right. Okay, well, that's an interesting rule. I've got to agree. It's like something different. It's not game breaking because brigades are only during the movement phase. They don't exist at any other point in the game.
Yeah,
there's no limit to how many stuff you can have lined up in a big block if you make the orders. So
I mean, and also it's so hang on a sec. I can order six units at once. What is my infantry? Well, you can't order six of the best infantry. You can't get. I've got access to Chaos Warriors. I'm going to put six units together, and that's how I'm going to play this game. It's like is in when we it plays well with the army rule plays very well with the troop selection that you can theoretically have in a cafe army. Yeah. So it's interesting that when it was originally written without. Including cavalry, then it was like, whoa, then we're getting this build that we're not meant to. And that's the point of like Theta Hammerize. It's interesting to see the development of the idea, because then why did that become that? Yeah. So top dog for me. So what should we discuss? Should we run through the troops?
Run through the list.
Yeah.
Paul, do you want to read them out? Do you want me to?
I can read them out. Otherwise, it's all one voice.
You see your voice saying these things. So
yeah. So our army, cafe army, starts with our crossbows. So they're infantry who have two attacks and one range shot. Range 30, no armor. So they come in at 40 points, a minimum one, no maximum, no special rules. So they have, importantly, they have two attacks, not three. So they're cheaper than Empire crossbowmen because who have three attacks.
Because they're not. They're slingers, aren't they, from Albion? This is what they're templated on.
I guess so. Yeah. Is it that?
As far as possible, you don't want anything new. You want just to try and find a profile that works that's already in the game. And I think that's Albion Slingers. Sherwin's favourite unit in the game. But I think it's fine. I mean, I don't know why their crossbows are so much weaker than the Empire ones. Because they. What have they lost?
No. They're as good at range, so they're good.
Yeah, they've just lost an attack, so
they're just not. You could say they're not motivated.
Not motivated.
Like they're inducted peasants or something. They're like,
they've probably got shoes, so they've got nothing.
Yeah, yeah.
Already having like, shoes.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, why am I risking my precious shoes in this fight when I could just be running away? Yeah.
Right, the next one's straightforward. It's halberdiers.
Okay, actually, they have the same profile also as... what else?
I don't know, nothing.
30 centimeter range, don't they? So they've got the same profile as Tomb King's archers, although the Tomb King's 5 points more. Therefore, the Tomb King's archers are 45.
They've got some special rules.
Yeah, but what also takes into effect is, so with any of the infantry in this army, you have to also factor in the fact that they have a unique army rule. They're not totally vanilla. None of the infantry units in this army list are going to be totally vanilla, because they all have access to, there's an army rule which they all have access to.
But I don't think we've charged anything for that army rule.
No, fair enough. Yeah. I mean, because it's another debate from a different topic, whether being undead is more of a benefit than a negative.
Because it gets charged as a benefit. Stop painting and pay attention. Like, come on.
All right. So the next thing is spearmen. They're 3 attacks, 3 hits, 6 armor, 45 points, minimum 2, no maximum, and they are a straight port from, well, lots of lists. Let's say Empire halberdiers for a start.
But they can't, they've got option special rule 1, which is, I guess, is what?
Special rule 1, which is terracotta warriors. So at no points, Goss, any of all of the army's spearmen units can be designated as terracotta warriors. They deploy normally with the start of the army, but can only form brigades themselves. So, deep negative. Also, they can only give or receive orders or support to each other, and can only be ordered by sorcerers, who will gain +1 command when doing so. So, also quite a big debuff. They cannot act on initiative, debuff, unaffected by terror, buff, or enemy within 20, buff, and cannot be confused, buff. So, that's quite interesting.
Yeah. But the issue with the terracotta warriors, they do exist in a few versions of Warhammer Cathay, and it doesn't feel like a proper fantasy Cathay list unless you've got them there in some shape or form.
Yeah.
The obvious way to bring them in would have been via a raised dead spell, but that's a problematic spell for those of you who've played against undead recently or ever. And we sort of thought about that, but it really seemed a bit too easy and a bit too powerful. Jim then came up with this, and this is again one of Jim's nice ideas, that you can just swap out some of your spearmen. If you want to have a very big, sort of solid, non-confusable core to the army, the debuffs are actually quite interesting. It can only be ordered by the sorcerers. The sorcerer normally has a command of 8, or 7 rather,
7, yeah.
8 when he's ordering the terracotta warriors. However, the interesting twist on the, if you want to have the dragon is an upgrade to the sorcerer. So actually, if you take the terracotta warriors, you're significantly restricting your ability to command them if you have the dragon as well, because you would take 2 sorcerers and upgrade 1 sorcerer to the
dragon. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
So that's a very interesting twist, very, very Jim way of doing things, but I like it.
Yeah, because with terracotta warriors, so what are they? Okay, so they're constructs, aren't they? So like, as in now, what you could say with constructs is that, are they made of like much harder material? So they're very hard to break. So then you might style them on like dwarves, or are they made much more brittle and thus more comparable with, I don't know, flesh and blood humans? So it's because you could, like, I had an when I was designing like ideas about this, it's like I thought about basing them basically off dwarf warriors as my idea, because I thought terracotta warriors, they'd be quite, I don't know, I'm in my head, I imagine they'd be quite tough. But this is certainly a good way to bring them into the army list. The important thing is that they are there represented in some way.
I'm trying to remember how big the terracotta warriors are, the actual ones in China relative to the size of a human. I think they're slightly smaller than
the
humans who are similar. Would have been, so what you could potentially do, if you found some 6mm Chinese soldiers, you could do it with that. Dancing Yak, controversial subject. He has some STLs for terracotta warriors on his site that you can buy, and you could scale them down when you're printing them, I guess. But and then it's a painting job.
Yeah, it's so many ways you could represent this unit type. It's only limited by your imagination. Like you could even do dwarf warriors and paint them like stone if you wanted to. You know, like, yeah, or like ghosts, or like, or however you wanted to represent them. It's you know, you're only limited by imagination, and the way to, like, I really like that as a really good piece of army list design of how to include them in. Yeah.
And I think for me, stone feels better than just, you know, the standard way of representing spirits where you spray them white and dunk them in either blue or green.
Yeah.
Like, easy paint job, but I think something with stone would be better. But again, you know, that's not going to affect the game at all. It's how you want to represent them on the tabletop.
Yeah.
Okay. Handguns.
Handguns, infantry. So, a little different here. Tax nothing and then one. So, one ranged attack at range 15. 25 points, only size one stand, no min and max. So it's all in their special rule, handguns. Any of all the army spearmen can be upgraded to include handguns within their ranks. Their range is only 15, but the projectiles can pierce armor far easier than an arrow or crossbow bolt, therefore count enemy values as one worse. They get the armor piercing rule. So for 25 points, you change the unit of spearmen into a unit of handguns, essentially. You know, so it's an upgrade to exchange, you know, spearmen to have a range 15 one attack each, armor piercing. So there you go.
But not terracotta warriors.
No, and importantly, you can't have both. You can't have a unit of terracotta warriors with guns.
With handguns, yeah.
Yeah, that don't work.
Fair enough. That's something.
I'm just looking at the thing. That's also very interesting that it is, because often when we put these unit upgrades into a list, and you swap your handguns for crossbowmen that you've already paid for. By adding it onto the spearmen, again, it's a subtle but important distinction, because potentially you could have no spearmen at all. Everything could be shooting, and you could do a very, very shooting army with this, and lots of them with handguns on the minus one armor, so that's pretty significant, even though the range is a bit shorter.
But it's a defensive weapon, isn't it? It's the equivalent of having a charge when you're charged, because you still get your four attacks. Mm-hmm. But it is quite expensive, 25 points.
Yeah, 25 points. So that would make a unit of these handguns would be 70 points. Yeah, that'd be quite pricey for three hits and six up armor. It's quite getting pricey for it.
Empire handgunners are what, 65, but they have no armor save.
Yeah.
So five points more than an Empire handgunner, but you have six up armor.
And less range. Under 15 range is big.
Yeah. There's a unit in the Kislev army, isn't there? Red Guard, who are like, they're like elite foot troopers, aren't they? And they have ranged attacks. So they're sort of comparable to those, I think. Mm. I think, yeah. Okay. So ogres.
Which aren't ogres, which are black orcs. But okay.
The ogres, so a unit called ogres. That has the ogre profile and has no special. So these ogres aren't chasing men automatically. So they're 110 points, aren't they? Yeah, so regular ogres are 105, aren't they?
Correct, yes. So ogres and black orcs are identical apart from one special rule.
Yeah. Oh, okay, yes.
Yeah, Negatrains. So if you take away the special rule,
yeah,
you just need to find another name, because why are these ogres suddenly better than all other ogres? What are these are next year?
T1000
ogres.
I personally would have said cafe ogres or mercy ogres or something like that. But yeah, anyway,
brainy ogres, ogres who eat Weetabix.
Ogres who eat Weetabix. There's no minimum and a maximum.
Even further east than normal ogres.
Eastern.
Okay,
Eastern.
So we could possibly name them something different. That's a good point.
Brainy Eastern ogres.
Hang on. There's an ogre unit in Warhammer, and they're meant to be far travelled, aren't they?
Manhunters.
Man-eaters. Yeah. Anyway.
So
it's called man-eaters, and they don't have that rule of have to go and eat men. Doesn't that contradict?
I mean, they've met enough men, and they're not bothered by it anymore.
They've eaten enough man. They're no longer bothered about man. Man's off the menu.
Yeah, man flesh, no, no thanks.
What was that bit? Hobbit's back on the menu, boys.
Meat's back on the menu. Yeah, yeah. Okay, so you can only have two units in an army in 2,000 points. So then, again, because you're straight away, because obviously they're infantry, so they, oh, hang on, I could put them in a brigade of six. Well, you're only going to have two of these ogres at most.
Yeah.
It can't be less than that. Yeah, moving on, you get Dishonored. So the fifth infantry type, five attacks, three hits, zero armor, and they are 70 points and have the special rule three. So they're Dishonored, which is basically the fanatic rule. Yeah. So, and they're a port of Empire flagellants.
Cool.
The standard fanatic rules, you could represent these. These could be either Dishonored from Catholic society. They could be
barbarians,
captured troops who are desperate to die. Yeah. No, anything that came up in the discussion after the list was posted on Facebook. If you read Martin's version of the list, he has an entry of monkey warriors, which have basically this profile, and you could represent them as monkey warriors.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. Doesn't matter. They still have the same effect in the game. Yep. But the army wasn't going to have, you know, a unit of fanatics and a unit of monkey warriors, because if you get into that number of fanatics, then you're starting to get into
overbalances. And again, they have a minimum of nothing and a maximum of one. I like maximums of one, because that makes them unique. So you can only have two units of these things as well. So you could put the Dishonored and the Ogres together, but that doesn't mean that you then are ordering six of better style of infantry, because you're going to get four of those ones added together. Good. Your chariots, obviously troop type chariot, three attacks, one shot, three hits and five up armor for 110 points, no minimum and a maximum only of one, no special rules. So these are the same type of chariots in quite a few lists, aren't they?
Tomb Kings.
Tomb Kings?
That's only one place.
There's only one place. Aren't Albion chariots? No, Albion's chariots don't have range attack, do they?
Tomb Kings chariots to get to shoot. Absolutely.
Yeah. So there you go. You can, you know, you can have your two units of chariots, but that's all you can have. Your cavalry, again, the troop type called just cavalry, type cavalry, 335. So this is your medium cavalry for 90 points. And again, no minimum and a maximum one. Now, here's an interesting question. So Cathay come into this debate over the difference between, like, you know, is a, when you have chariots and you have medium cavalry, the different, you know, would you ever take...
Not the same. It's not the same discussion. They're completely different chariots.
Yeah, I suppose they're. Yeah. So in this case, their points are make them a different option, don't they?
Yeah, it's like massive. They're 20 points different.
It's 20 points
you're
different.
You're only allowed two chariots.
Yeah.
So you couldn't have six, eight chariots because you can't have them.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
It's worth actually pointing out also with the chariots. These are standard Warmaster chariots, which are on a 20x40 base.
Yeah.
Ancients and medieval, there are a number of armies that have chariots on 40x40 bases.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Some of the sort of ancient...
they're like your heavy chariots.
Hittite and that kind of armies. And also the Chinese Warring States armies, 40mm bases crop up.
Yeah.
So why not do that? Partly because we're not going to recreate history. We want to keep it all standardized for Warmaster. Yep. And also at the end of the day, it's only two units. You know, it's not we're breaking people's collections and saying we're not saying, you know, if you had a historical Chinese army, you can use a lot of it for this, but there will always be a couple of extra things you've got to paint up. Not too many.
So then you have your light cavalry, your type cavalry, two attacks only, one shot, so range 15, three hits and six of armor for 60 points, so that's your goblin wolf riders. There's no minimum, there's a maximum of three, and they have the special rule four, which means their shooting is range 15, which makes them the port of light cavalry, port of wolf riders. Now, with the light cavalry optional rules, so you were playing that, and we always do, is that well, you don't play, do you, Mary? Like,
played twice in the last week.
That makes them the better version of getting access to both parts of the light cavalry optional rule, which is, means that they can evade in any direction, which is really good for light cavalry, gives them a role. And also being this type of light cavalry means that they can only be chased by other light cavalry to the front, only be chased by other light cavalry or something that can chase them, like flyers or chase anything. So, and you can have three units in this, so you could have six units of light cavalry in this army. You could do. Yeah, and that it was interesting because that at the tournament that we ran recently, you weren't there, Barry, you were busy, you know, like shielding, you know, like there was a build that had a Orc and Goblin army that had eight units of Wolf Riders in it, which was askew, you would say, but that was because that light cavalry rule was in there. His play, the player was making full use of it.
And he did. That was Paul Gobbold.
Paul Gobbold, yeah, he came second.
And it was Paul and Janus slugging it out in the final.
That's right.
Yeah, but he's a very good player, Paul. So it's not surprising that he's chosen. Chosen an interesting build, using an interesting exploit in the rules.
I mean, is it like for me, if I was playing Cathay, I'd always take 2 units of light cavalry and to go on either flank. That's I'd always do that. I would be tempted even to say how am I building this? I could go for more and try that kind of interesting skew. You know, of like, okay, let's see, I have a brigade of light cavalry. There might be some matchups where they're actually really strong because they're going to be hard to be tracked down. They're going to do a lot of disruption, and maybe that's going to play off well if I have a lot of artillery, for example. Yeah. Cool.
Charge them into that big brigade of Skaven because they will.
That was a bad move. Yeah, that is in like they're not good in that matchup. So, okay, we have rocket launchers. So artillery, one close combat attack and 3 ranged. At range 60, they have 2 hits per stand, no armor. They're 2 units in a 2 stands in a unit for 80 points. You could have minimum nothing and maximum is 1. Special rule 5, which is rocket launchers. They have range of 60 and a hit. Unit hit by rockets is allowed to take a normal armor save, so they're not reducing armor saves. Rocket launchers cannot shoot at charging enemies. So that is a range 60 artillery piece. So 2 stands, 6 shots, but you will get armor saves to this. Interesting.
It's not a stone thrower. It doesn't do.
It's not a stone thrower. No.
Okay. Because that was one of the things we talked about, and other people had suggested that the rocket launcher, basically because of the trajectory of the rocket, you could treat it and model it on the stone thrower stats.
Yeah.
But it's a doom diver.
Yes, it is, isn't it? I think.
Yeah. I think that was one of my challenges to him. I said to him, don't whatever you do, don't start inventing stuff. Find something that works from somewhere else. I'm pretty sure that's templated on Doom Divers.
Yes, I think it is, yeah.
And without the extra confusion, Doom Divers are not that effective. You think they would be, but they're people...
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They're certainly not cannons.
So this is an army that has 2 units of artillery in it, so one of the more artillery-favoured armies. Its second unit of artillery is triple bows. Their artillery, they have 1 attack and then 2 of a star, which we'll explain in a moment. Range 40, 2 hits, no armour saves, 2 stands and a unit. For 65 points, their special rule is 6, which means triple bows are bolt throwers, page 75 of the rulebook. So bolt throwers don't allow armour saves and can pierce ranks. So between the two, you've got not the best artillery brigade that is possible to field in Warmaster, but you have a pretty, not a bad one either, because you've got 2 types. You've got a more range, a further ranged one, and you've got a more close in, more defensive one. Put them together, it's not bad. It's like, it's certainly better than armies that only have 1 type of artillery.
Yeah, it's the same as Goblin armies. They've got the same.
I think it's their package, except the difference there is Goblins can get access to more artillery overall.
I was
pretty strong with Jim on this. I was like saying, which he agreed with, it was never a debate, but he's like, we can't, in the original Cathay list, they could get more than 4 units of artillery in a 2,000 point army list. And it was like, no, don't do that. You know, like, make that uniquely only to Goblins, take that away. You know, like, having too much artillery, even less effective stuff, is a Pandora's box.
It makes it very defensive,
More than anything, the combination of artillery in this list is what needs playtesting.
Yeah.
The previous version, the triple bows were 60 centimeter range. The rocket, and you were allowed 2 of them. The rocket launcher would drive you back and cause confusion of 4, 5, 6, similar to Tomb King's stone thrower. And that might have been a bit too good. I know Jim has done some very extensive trying every possible permutation. And I just wonder whether what has been done here dilutes it a little bit too much to actually be effective.
The alternative would be just put in stone throwers, which is a template you can use. And also, but the 60 centimeter bolt thrower had no other place in the game.
No, it had no comparison.
In total, the what artillery they get, I think it's worth keeping an eye on as it goes out to other people to play around with and to see what other people's experiences are, just like, you know, we're doing with the Nippon list, to see how it fares.
No, it depends, is it, in a sense, because the key thing here, because their range, because the rocket launches are range 60, but they don't, you get armor saves as normal. There's no negatives, there's no armor piercing, there's no mm-hmm. armor saves, so they project out 6 dice worth when they're together, you know, then that means on average you do 3 hits at range 60, but you get armor saves. So there's actually, like, that's not going to trouble a dwarf army much because, well, you know, you probably won't do enough damage to me to lose a stand. But in a unarmored army walking around like Albion, you know, for example, that will actually do some damage because they'll probably, they've got a lot of units that are only 3 hits with 0 to 6 armor. You know, so it's, they'll be this type of artillery is game specific. It's like, oh, in that matchup it's going to do work because I will actually be able to damage what I hit more consistently. In another matchup it's like, actually I'm not going to really do that much, you know, in this, because the army's got good armor saves that I'm going to fire at.
Okay, right. So characters, what we got?
Characters, it's the standard Empire package. You got a general for command 9, 125, a heroes who are command 8, 80 points, and a sorcerer who's a wizard, command 7 for 45 points. Same minimum and maximum restrictions. So that's straight from lots of other army lists. So it's their special rules that it's in the other stuff that comes in interesting. So their mounts, we have a celestial dragon. So that's a mount. It's plus 3 attacks. It's got a command 8 in its own stat as well, 100 points. You can only have one, so max is in, no minimum max is 1 star, and its special rule is 7. I'm going to read that.
One, I need to do that again, Paul.
Army, so that's elite rule, can be upgraded to become a, read out that again.
Oh, yeah, just think you need to, your thing just went completely off. So you just need to start again on the dragon.
Oh, sorry. Okay.
Hang on. You've got
the dragon is a mount for plus 3 attacks. It has a command. You can hear me now?
No, and your screen's gone. Just give me a second to calm down. Maybe let somebody else read this out while yours tries to catch.
Crack on. So,
okay. Chris, you want to talk about the celestial dragon?
Okay, while Paul sorts his internet out. Okay, so we have a celestial dragon, which is a mount, gives plus 3 attacks, command of 8, 100 points. You're allowed one of them in the army.
Why has it got a command value for a mount?
Because it's basically, if you read the special rule, one sorcerer per army can be upgraded to become a dragon, which flies, gives orders, casts spells, and causes terror. The dragon cannot give orders to terracotta warriors. So in the original version of the list, the celestial dragon was the only wizard option for the army. And in ancient and Chinese mythology, the dragons were subservient even to the emperor. So the emperor was in command of the entire country, including the dragons. And that was their wizard option. It was a wizard with 3 attacks. So what Jim has done is made it into basically your sorcerer becomes a wizard with 3 attacks, but he can't order any of the terracotta warriors.
So again, he's now 145 points. We've lost Paul completely. I had a few going. Oh, well.
Hopefully he'll find a way back. But I think it's interesting actually that I think this will affect the build significantly if you choose to take this character mount or character upgrade. It's not really a mount, that you're probably not going to take the terracotta warriors, but you're going to have a very, very hard combat character who can go in, cause terror, fly around the place, do spells while he's flying around, and as long as he doesn't get killed, you're probably all right.
They've got an interesting choice because they've got quite a lot of mounts, but not a lot of them do anything, do they?
Well,
this is the only terror causer, which is, I think I questioned Jim, why have you got 4 mounts and there's only one causes terror? I don't think anything else causes terror, does it? No.
No, you are correct. So the other options, you've got a chariot, plus 1 attack for 10 points. You've got a tiger mount, plus 2 attack for 20 points. A Kirin in some anglicized versions of the original word, Kieran is a mount for a wizard, and it's basically the same idea as a Bretonian unicorn. I'll read out its special rule. Once per battle, the Keelan's magical power adds +1 to the dice roll when casting a spell, and you have to save before you do the spell. So it's basically the equivalent of a unicorn.
Yeah.
So the reason for all the mounts, you've got +2 attack mount for heroes, you've got a +1 sort of attack, which you're not going to really use on the wizard, but you can have a buff on your wizard for 15 points. And then you've got a chariot, because the, again, with the fluff, and the reason the chariots are so limited, the very elite warriors were the ones who went around in chariots. So therefore, there should be an option to upgrade.
But again, all these are limited to just 1 per 1,000.
Yes.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Okay. I mean, yeah, variety is the spice of life. And we kept the number of entries to the maximum of 10. So that's cool. I had to kind of back off a little bit on the mounts, even though I probably think there's one too many, but I think 3 would probably have been more reasonable, but 3, 4, it's only a development list.
It's, but I think they're all there, and they're very flavoursome. Having your, you know, we'll see what comes with the playtesting, and we'll see whether it needs tweaked a bit. But I don't see them as being over optioned. If you look at some of the original armies, there's all sorts of options in both the orc and the high elf lists, which are similar. Okay, discounting the turning your wizard into a dragon option, but they're all nice for the fluff. Okay. Do you want to look at the spells?
Yeah, for sure.
If Paul can come back in.
Is he knocking on the door?
I don't know. I'm not.
I see. Right, so what are the spells? We've got Glory of Cathay.
Glory of Cathay. Oh, here he is. He's coming. Hello, Paul. You're back.
Yeah, don't know what happened there. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, we're doing spells now. Yeah, right, carry on.
Glory of Cathay, 4 plus the cast, 30 centimeter range. This spell could be cast upon a friendly unit of unengaged missile-armed infantry or cavalry in range. The sorcerer does not need to be able to see the friendly unit nor their intended target. When the spell is cast in the unit, it can shoot twice that turn instead of once. If it has already shot that turn, it can therefore shoot again immediately. If it is yet to shoot, then it can shoot twice. When a unit shoots twice due to the Glory of Cathay, the second shot is always at a -1. One hit on a 5+. So this is basically the Heaven's Fire out of the high elves.
Yeah. Okay.
It's
I mean, it's so rare you actually get this off and then it does anything. But I mean, it's the if you've got nothing else to do, it's something you can do.
Mm-hmm.
Lion Dogs Attack.
Okay, Lion Dogs Attack, 4 up to cast, 30 centimeter range. The spell can be cast on any enemy unit within range, regardless of whether it's worth it or not. The spell takes effect until the end of the opposing player's next turn. While the spell lasts, the unit cannot charge, and if engaged in combat, will not pursue or advance. Even units that are obliged to charge, pursue or advance, will not do so if affected by this spell.
Doom and Despair? Yeah.
Yeah, this is a very, very, very effective spell. Luckily, they've only got 2 sorcerers, yeah? They can only do the 2.
Yep.
Because like your Tomb Kings, they can cast this 4 times a turn, and that can really change the course of a battle.
Mm-hmm. Tomb Kings and Dark Elves have this spell. I think one of the other armies.
Lizardmen have it. They have 3 shots. Yeah, it's a very, very strong spell because it takes the best piece on the opponent's army out of the game most of the time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay, spell number 3, Ferocity of Tigers. 5 up to cast, 30 centimeters. This spell can be cast on a friendly unit engaged in combat. The spell can be cast without line of sight to the target. Spell lasts for the duration of the following combat phase. Every standing unit adds +1 to its attack values and becomes immune to terror.
Yep.
That's a good spell. Yep.
Yep.
Buff for combat. That's done. And one extra attack per stand, not one attack per unit. That's significant as well.
Yeah,
that's
good.
And then the final spell, Tranquility of Heaven, 5 up to cast, 15 centimeter range. All friendly units within 15 centimeters of sorcerer are immune to terror for the following combat phase. That's a good buff as well.
Yeah, cool. There's no 6 up like uber spell, so which is cool. Yeah, it's like it's a decent spell deck that is. For that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. So that's actually a good point you bring up there, Paul. Are there any of these spells that you would think it's worth having a Ring of Magic for, or are you happy with 5 up odds at worst to cast them? Because very often when you have the Ring of Magic, you're saving it for that 6 up spell. You've got to get it off at a certain moment.
I think The thing that isn't...
He's going again.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I don't... Because there isn't a movement spell, or there isn't a raise dead, you know... Oh.
Or raise fen beast.
Back again? Yeah. Because there isn't a six-up spell, yeah, raise fen beast, so there's something... Like, you get something you know, expect... I don't see it being an obvious like, oh, I need a ring of magic for that. But that doesn't mean that it's not a bad. That's not a bad thing. A lot of armies don't like the spells complement each other because like the shooting again, you would say, oh, why wouldn't I just have the spell where the sorcerer does three attacks in some way, like as a magic missile. Well, with the shooting again, you do have units that have armor pierce. In the army, mm-hmm. the handgunners. So you would cast this Glory of Cafe on a handgunner unit because three more shots. They have
gone again.
Well, I think Paul's gone again. I think what he was about to say, and I agree actually, another shooting attack from the right unit at the right moment. And particularly if the unit hasn't shot already, you can shoot twice. That's probably quite important. Because if you get two lots of shots off, then you can sort of, and at minus one armor save, you could do enough damage or you could get enough drive back dice to destroy the unit.
Yeah,
you target I'll tell you three, you get, and then you drive back more than 20 units destroyed.
I used to use this a lot when we played with Reavers that had three up shooting. Because hitting on threes, then hitting on fours, that was good. But this is, I mean, it's a four up to cast, you're not... there's nothing worth Ring of Magic in here. Nothing. But that's good. That's good. That's fine. That's not a problem.
But it just means you use your points on something else and you don't feel bad about not having the Ring of Magic. But it's just an interesting thing for the listeners who are experienced players and they're reading the spell, listening. I always think, you know, is there something in this list that's worth taking the Ring of Magic for? Or you're building a strategy around having to get that spell off. And there's nothing here that requires that, I don't think.
No, but what
still,
on the flip side,
it's still a good spell list.
Yeah, it is a good spell list. It's a consistent, like, I think the Tranquility of Heaven, I'm not sure where that's templated from. That feels different to me. I don't, maybe that's one.
Maybe.
I don't
is
know.
It one of the Bastonian defensive spells.
Possibly, but it doesn't, I don't think so. But I mean, it's not a groundbreaking spell. It's not like raise six units of Terracotta Warriors or anything silly. So, I think the interesting thing about this list is how many different lists I've already built in my head. That there's like a massive variety of lists to build, which is good. That's what you want.
I think it could be good fun. And you know, again, credit to Jim. The spell list is the one that he's sort of worked out, refining the slightly messier one in the previous version. And I don't think there are any redundant entries. You can see a place for all of them, and there's nothing that you could. You'd want to swap for anything else. I think that's pretty good.
So what's the process now? You've released this document into the Facebook page yesterday, as far as, and then there's going to be a period of playtesting and people being able to feedback and stuff, and then it will go to some kind of verification process in the future along with Nippon. Yeah?
Yep. Now, whether that is for... With the current situation, whether that extended play testing period is going to be until the end of this year, or maybe it could be till the end of next year, I really don't know.
It's not easy to play games at the moment, I've got to be honest.
No, that's true.
I've played a couple, but I mean, yeah, I wouldn't say there's a lot of games being played anywhere at the moment, in general terms.
But at the end of the day, there's not a great deal of hurry, and you know, the list is it's been play tested a lot. And you know, we think it ought to be fine, but there may be a little bit of tidying up to do right at the end. We should mention a little bit about models, perhaps, for people who want to do the army. From the bulk of your army, there's probably three main sources. Source number one, Magister Militum. They have all of the human troops, very definitely, in their, I think it's QIN codes, so their kin warring states range. They're nice models, very nice. Other one, Fog of War. Fog of War have lots of different ones for the different factions that you would have, the different states that you would have had within war in China. Very nice models. The cavalry is a little bit closer to 12mm in scale from what I've seen, so it'll scale nicely with Games Workshop stuff, more so perhaps in the Monster Militant true 10mm scale cavalry. And you can probably get some of their four horse chariots and just use two of them for the chariot units. Other possible source, Kalistra. Kalistra do nice ranges of Chinese and Korean troops. The infantry will be closer to 12mm, but the cavalry will scale well with GW stuff. So, you know, take your pick, mix and match. The
Something I hear quite a lot is that do they share sculpts, or is it Pendragon and then share sculpts? Kalistra. Everybody keeps saying all the same sculpts in different scale. Well, that doesn't even make any sense. This is before 3D printing. But there's no way of getting a sculpt in 10mm and having the same sculpt in 12mm without re-sculpting it.
I have not seen... I mean, you could be talking about the fact that the Pendragon's new-ish fantasy line, if they call Warband, it is more closer to 12mm than 10. Some reason, the 12mm miniatures company. And Kalistra stuff has always been 12mm. I don't think the sculpts are the same.
Oh, I never saw it either.
I've not seen, you know, for example, I've bought some of the Pendragon Dark Elves recently because they don't have any cloaks. They're nice for converting. You can snip the bases off and put them into cavalry, which I'm doing a little bit. Paul's asking to get back in if you want to.
Okay, again. Third time's a charm. If you don't, if you get kicked out this time, I'm leaving him out.
I've not noticed anything in common between the Pendragon sculpts and the Kalistra ones. I don't know. I'll check again, but I think that's just an
I think it's just an off the cuff comment somebody made in a Facebook page, and I wasn't aware of that.
So what else do you need to make for your army? You need to get some of the vegetarian ogres. I'm sure Blackgate do. I know some ogres that are suitable for that.
I don't know if they're that well behaved. I don't know if they could be. If they could be weaned off the man flesh. The vegan ogres.
Vegan ogres.
The bogus. I never understood man flesh tasted so good, and like elf flesh, was that too bitter? Because there's no meat on it or something.
I don't know. That's the recipe channel on ogres Facebook or something like that.
And the dwarves are too hairy, you know, obviously there's a lot of it's just too hairy.
Too hairy, too sinewy probably. If you want meat to be tender, if you're buying cuts of meat in the supermarket, you want the meat that the animal hasn't used much, which is why fillet is so tender, instead of some of the working muscles on your average cow. So maybe that's what it is, muscles are too tough.
Okay, well, I've probably got plenty of unworked meat on me then. Well rested.
Just other things for the models for the army. It's worth saying that Eureka do some nice Foodog and Kirin type cavalry. So if you wanted to have a slightly more fantasy flavor for your cavalry units, you could model them with some of the Eureka things. And as Jim has pointed out in the fluff roots, the crosser units and the light cavalry, they could well be hobgoblins. So you could perhaps use some cobblestone models because the cobblestone orcs work very well for hobgoblins. Or if you've got some goblins somewhere, you could use the goblins, just normal goblins and goblin, you know, wolf riders. So again, it's however you want to represent it on the table. Your dragon, there's quite a few different options. Reproduce some things that are suitable. The dragon, because there's only one per army, it's probably something you're going to spend a lot of time making a nice piece and painting it nicely. Paul has come and gone and come again.
Nearly back.
I'm here.
Fourth time lucky.
This is your last time. Last chance saloon.
Sorry, I should have tried to do the call on my gaming laptop. Sorry, apologies.
So we're nearly finished. I think we're just.
No. But it's more.
But it's good to come back. Good to come back and say goodbye.
Yeah. Mm.
So right, for Chris, if I don't like something, or if I particularly like something, how do I get that? You.
In terms of feedback on the list?
On this list. Because I can't get to Jim, because Jim lives in Jimland, behind the internet, beyond the internet in the hills, like a...
He lives behind the screen, like the Wizard of Oz. Feedback, please, if you can post stuff on the Facebook page or private message me via the Facebook group, that's always a good way of doing things. I mean, the whole thing here is we want, like everything, when we sit down to create things, we do it because we want to have fun, to create something balanced that's actually playable, create something that you can enjoy with your builds. And I think it'll be interesting to see when all of us kind of go with the army, very possibly borrowing Jim's one to actually play at the tabletop. It'll be interesting to see what works out, because sometimes what works out in your head doesn't necessarily work when you try it with different opponents. As I found in the Prominent Paul's tournament last week.
Certainly. I mean, I can see several ways that I would build and try a cafe list out, definitely. So, and to me, that's a sign of a good list building. If if it makes you interested, and B, you can see several different ways to have a go at it, you know, then yeah, that's pretty cool. It's been echoed at the start, but it's what you two have managed to do is to take something that I wouldn't have had a particular desire, you know, like as in to play, did something. Yeah, I'd be quite interested to try that. Yeah, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. All credit to Jim, because I was very lukewarm in this list when we started with the edit. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think just one off the cuff, I think the six brigade rather than four, I think the strongest use of that will be around the artillery brigade, where you could maybe attach a couple of light cav or an infantry.
So
that allows that brigade to have more protection than a normal brigade.
So hang on. You could do the triple bows. Triple bows, rocket launchers, and you two units of light cavalry on either flank, but remember, Barry, the rocket launchers can't stand and shoot.
No, but the triple bows can.
Why not do two spearmen upgraded to handgunners?
Put
them on the edge. I think it just allows more flexibility on the artillery brigade than anywhere else in the list, and I think that's quite interesting.
Definitely. Yeah.
Cool. Mm-hmm. Well done, Chris. Well done, Jim.
Well done, Jim.
Listen, Jim. So well done, Jim.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you, Jim. Again,
he's on the outskirts of Leicester, and maybe he's in lockdown again.
Maybe he's not allowed to move.
I think he was on holiday last week. Where he was on holiday, I don't know, but
Leicester. Right. Okay. So we've done back-to-back recordings. So maybe a couple of weeks before the next one after this one. So
yep. Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Chris. Thank you, Paul.
Thank you. Yeah. We'll have to think up a cool topic for the next one, I guess.
We've got a topic we didn't get to.
What was that?
We can't discuss it now. There's no point.
Cool.
It says main topic two, but we've already run out of time, so that'll be a discussion for next time.
Okay,
next
cool.
Time. All right then. Okay. Thanks for your time, fellas. Have a good week.
Thanks so much. Cheers.
Cheers, Chris.
Bye.
Bye.
The amazing Cromedy Forge, a new range, Pictish Woodlanders, available from 10mm Wargaming.